The onlooking world has no trouble understanding a bunch of Christians who have everything in common hanging out together. Because the Christians might say, you know, Jesus is the common denominator here. But the average non-Christian is going to say, okay, cool, but I kind of feel like if I remove Jesus from the equation, you guys would still all want to hang out with each other. But what the world cannot understand or explain is when people who have no natural reason to be unified come together because of the one supernatural thing that is pulling them together, and that's Christ.
Somewhat anxious, always authentic. This is Real Life Floating. I'm your host, Shelby Abbott, and our desire with this podcast is to help guide you toward the life-changing power of Jesus for relationships in a constantly shifting culture. We're called Real Life Floating ... And those three dots at the end of our title are really significant. The dots describe being in process. We haven't at all arrived. We're very much in a state of loading. And it's my job to be a trusted friend, come alongside you, and help you walk closely with God in the humor and hardship of life. So we're going to do that in a number of different ways, and I've been doing that for the last 20 years in a campus ministry called Crew. I've worked with college students for my entire career, and I love interacting with young people because I know the potential you have to change the world for the glory of Jesus. And that's what this podcast is all about. So today, I'm talking with a longtime friend of mine, Matt Smethurst. I met Matt his freshman year of college when I was on campus doing ministry at James Madison University in Virginia. Matt got involved with the ministry of Crew, and we got to be really close there. He went on to marry Megan, a fellow JMU alum, and they spent a few years overseas as missionaries sharing the gospel. He eventually went to seminary, became a managing editor at the Gospel Coalition, authored a few helpful books, and just recently planted River City Baptist Church in Richmond, Virginia, where he's the lead pastor. Today, we talk about the importance of church involvement for you as a young person and what we need to process about evangelism before we even open our mouths to talk about Jesus. I love Matt's passion for Christ, his challenging messages, and really stinking amazing sense of humor. In fact, when I see a funny pic or video on social media, he's usually the guy I text it to first. All right, here's my conversation with Matt Smethurst. So let me start with this. What are you listening to right now? Like music or podcasts or audiobooks, anything that you kind of, when you decide to listen to something either in the car or leisurely, what's going into your eardrums?
Every day I try to listen to the 1 year read through the Bible podcast put out by the Gospel Coalition, which is someone reading the daily entries from D.A. Carson's For the Love of God devotional. I, you know, like every Christian, recently listened to the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast. Definitely a cautionary tale there and a lot of lessons to be drawn from that. I love listening to books, so I'll listen to anything. I mean, one of the books I listened to in recent months was Jerry Seinfeld's Is This Anything, which is basically a collection of all of his stand-up bits from his career. But the great thing about the audiobook is that he's the one reading the bits. And so,
yeah, I was just going to ask you, is he the one who actually does it? Because timing is everything with that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So the book is available in print, but it's one of those where you should definitely go for the audiobook.
Yeah.
And I enjoy listening. When it comes to audiobooks, I tend to listen to more lighthearted stuff or fiction, stuff that's story driven rather than deep theology.
Yeah, that's great. I'll have to give the Jerry Seinfeld one a listen because I haven't listened to any of his stuff in a while. I used to watch Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, but I haven't been back to that in a while. So I need my every other year influx of Seinfeld in my life. So you're a church planter, and obviously your routine has changed pretty significantly as of late. But if you could eliminate one thing from your daily routine as it exists right now, what would it be?
Administrative emails. That's a boring answer.
Yeah.
In fact, I feel like I don't even have the right to give that answer because I actually am blessed in a way most church planters aren't. And that's that I have an administrative assistant, a pastoral assistant for administration. He's only working part-time, but he's doing incredible work. So he's handling the heaviest load administratively. But I just find that my soul begins to shrivel when I'm living out of my email inbox. Yeah. And that happens more than I would like to admit. Yeah. So I would say that.
I would probably say that many of us can relate with that, regardless of our age. It's like email is both this wonderful blessing, and you get these little diamonds every now and then. You're like, oh, that was a great email. And then you, for one diamond, you get 600 pieces of garbage. So I completely agree with you.
It can be anxiety inducing too, because emails can become like minimized windows in your mind. Uh-huh. Where, you know, even if you're not dealing with it in the moment, they're just still there,
still
kind of humming in the background, haunting you.
Taking up mental space. That's true. What's your favorite food and why is it candy?
Why do you know me so well? Okay. Well, before we get to candy, let me dignify myself by saying that, you know, let me say something that makes me sound cultured first, okay?
You're not a five-year-old boy, right?
I'm going to say pad thai. Pad Siu is another Thai food that I love, but
yes, very good.
Thai is definitely a go-to. And I love seafood. My grandmother lives in Virginia Beach, and growing up, that was always a kind of annual treat over the summer. I ended up living with her actually for an entire summer before my senior year of college. So I worked as a bellhop and valet at a hotel and ate so much seafood that summer. It was incredible.
Nice. So you and I, we both love candy a lot. You're more of the like fruity candy, hard candy, as opposed to chocolate candy. Is that correct?
I'm often dismissed that way, but I would like to say that I love chocolate candy. Reese's Pieces in particular. But yes, I do love the sort of fruity, multicolored candy more than the average 38-year-old. So whether it's Nerds or Twizzlers or Spree or something like that, even Pez, that can bring a smile to my face very quickly. Yeah.
And you and I are in the habit of texting each other just random times when we're awed by specific like displays of candy around the holiday season or the Halloween season or anything that's just like, look at this. And we don't even need to comment on those text messages. It's just like, we know and understand that this is worthy of our appreciation.
Yeah, I mean, the candy industry, there have been some impressive developments in the candy industry. So just take Nerds, for example. I think it was probably in when I was in college and you were on staff with Crew that Nerds Rope came out. And of course, we loved that. But in more recent years, Nerds has come out with the bite-sized version of Nerds Rope, which is called Nerds Gummy Clusters, as well as something called Big Chewy Nerds, which are just circular, nerd-flavored, kind of a hard exterior with a soft inside, and they're just glorious.
Right. There's like a metaphor for that, a sermon illustration in there somewhere. Well, you've been in ministry for quite a long time and have just planted a church in Richmond, Virginia. And I have what I think is an important question. Why should a college student or person in their 20s care about the local church and be involved when it's really not about youth group anymore? So they're not going because their parents are making them go, and they're not going just because youth group is fun. Why should they care about the local church and be involved as a young person?
Yeah, first of all, I would just say that if you are a young person and that's not intuitive to you, I get it. You know, it wasn't for a long time intuitive to me. I wasn't anti-church. But I kind of had a church optional Christianity where I felt like church was, you know, a helpful add-on, kind of a side dish, as it were, but not part of the main course. And the Christian life is meant to orbit around the church. But I think in our individualistic, consumeristic, modern American age, it is very easy to adopt a kind of me and Jesus spirituality with the best of intentions, not realizing that that might help you run fast, but it's not going to help you run far. Mm-hmm. If you want to last, if you want to endure to the end in your Christian life, you're going to need others with you and around you, holding you accountable in the context of a church. And the other, there's obviously a ton I could say on this. The other thing I'll just mention right here is that Jesus established the church on earth in Matthew 16, verse 18, and it was the only organization that he founded during his time on earth. To no other institution did he give the same promise that he gave to the church when he said, "I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." So there's all kinds of other good Christian ministries, seminaries can be helpful, but all of those could close up shop tomorrow and the kingdom of Jesus would march on just fine. It is the church alone to whom he's given that promise of ultimate success. And why would we not want to get in on that? Why would we not want to be a part of that mission, which he has guaranteed will prevail?
Yeah. I think one of the perspectives that young people often miss is that they see the flashiness, the shininess of other ministries like parachurch organizations like Crew, and they compare that and contrast it with the local church, and they just go, this one over here is way more my vibe, and this one is not. And to be honest, most of the time, bro, I mean, they're kind of right, because when you get to a local church, they have youth group, or they have like quote-unquote college ministry, then they have singles ministry, and then ministry for everyone else. And there's a lot of young people who just go, I don't want to be thrown into the singles ministry, because the singles ministry is just a ministry where they're trying to pair us off so we get married, so then they know what to do with us. Would you say that that's kind of accurate, or what kind of culture are you going to try to shape in your church that would look different than that?
I think that's definitely accurate, and I think that, not that there's anything wrong with certain ministries or programs that are targeted to a particular demographic, but there is a danger. There is a danger when those can take on a life of their own and kind of become churches within a church. Mm. And that danger is that you lose the glory and the wonder and the compelling power of what the church can display to the world. And what I mean by that is that the onlooking world has no trouble understanding a bunch of Christians who have everything in common hanging out together. Because the Christians might say, you know, Jesus is the common denominator here. But the average non-Christian is going to say, okay, cool. But I kind of feel like if I remove Jesus from the equation, you guys would still all want to hang out with each other. But what the world cannot understand or explain is when people who have no natural reason to be unified come together across those differences because of the one supernatural thing that is pulling them together, and that's Christ. And so what I'm praying for in our church here in Richmond, Virginia, is that we would have a diverse unity, and that the diversity includes ethnicity, but even kind of a multi-generationality. So one thing about our home group structure, for example, is they're not going to be age-segregated groups. You know, you're going to have an older couple, empty nesters, you're going to have a young college student, a single girl, a young family, because each of those people, even though they might not have a lot in common other than Jesus, they need one another and can be uniquely served by one another in a way that their peers alone can't.
That's great. And that actually kind of leads well nicely into what I wanted to ask you next, which was, how can a college student or a 20-something contribute to the health of a local church in a way that other age groups cannot? Like, what's unique that they bring to the table in a church environment?
I think certainly energy for mission. So a college student who's just busy doing good for the Lord, serving people, reaching the lost, can have a kind of a catalyzing, invigorating effect in a church where some of that familiarity can start to lull the best of us to sleep if we're not careful. And so I'm often really galvanized in my own faith when I'm around college students and recent, you know, just 20-somethings, because they do have a kind of wonder, a kind of energy, a kind of spring in their step that I often feel like I've lost. And so they can bring a lot of that zeal and really help a church remember what it's about. Because if a church is not on mission, then it's just a bunch of disobedient Christians hanging out.
And now it's time for Three Dots, Three Thoughts on Real Life Loading. We'll get back to the conversation in just a sec, but this is where I share three simple ideas that could potentially change your life. They probably won't, but they could.
Thought one.
The next time you make a box of mac and cheese, be sure to salt the water that you boil the macaroni in. You may have heard that before, but then, when you go to drain the water, keep a little bit of the pasta water in the pot before you add the butter, milk, and that packet of neon powdered cheese. The little bit of salty pasta water adds a ton of good flavor to the mac and cheese. Try it. You'll never drain the entire pot of water ever again.
Thought two.
Not many people go bowling anymore, but I still love it. And if you enjoy bowling like me, here's a fun little thing to do to make your bowling experience even better. Always type in a weird nickname for yourself into that computer thingy that keeps score. Every time I go bowling, I use the name Flapjack. Now, I've been doing that for years, and it always, for some reason, just makes me happy. A friend of mine always uses Tootsie Roll, and his name's Trevor. So come up with a totally random nickname for yourself, too. It'll be fun.
Thought three.
I have a friend who became a follower of Jesus Christ through watching Christian TikTok videos. She liked one, the algorithm sent more, and now she's born again. A buddy of mine has an ex-girlfriend who became a Christian after she watched that old Mandy Moore movie, A Walk to Remember. I know a girl in Asia who Googled the words, "Oh my God," because she kept hearing them in an American movie she was watching. The Google search led to a website that communicated the gospel. She became a Christian, and then she led her parents to Christ afterward. What's my point? God can do whatever he wants, however he wants. He has no limits. This has been Three Dots, Three Thoughts on Real Life Floating. Matt and I were talking earlier about the importance of being involved in a local church. But when it comes to evangelism, most of the opportunities we have to share our faith exist outside the walls of the church. So we're going to chat about that for a little bit here. And also, I'll get Matt to admit a very embarrassing story about being romantically attracted to a basketball. How have you seen your love for basketball and hip-hop benefit the mission God has called you to? Maybe share a story or two. I'm thinking about one specifically about your time in East Asia, but why don't you unpack a little bit about how God has used some of your, what you would call secular interests for the mission he's called you to, specifically in kingdom work?
Well, that's easy. I mean, I think maybe the boldest thing I've ever done for Jesus was on my college intramural basketball team, donning a uniform that said God Squad.
And I was on the God Squad flag football team. So I didn't play basketball because I'm tiny. I'm 5'6". But yeah, the God Squad is kind of was the crew label that we did, right? For anyone who was playing in intramural sports.
That's right.
Did you get any pushback from that?
No, I'm just kidding because, you know, it's obviously not very bold to just put on a t-shirt.
Although that's some people's evangelistic strategies today, right?
Yeah. And hey, we could have made them any color. We made them bright yellow.
That's bold, man. It's very bold.
So hip hop has not served my ministry so much as it has connected me to certain people that I really revere, folks like Shylin and others whom I've been able to develop a friendship with, and they've really leveraged the medium of hip-hop to reach people. Like, in many ways, Christian hip-hop in the early, mid-2000s, you know, Cross Movement and Lamp Mode Recordings, they, and even Reach Records in those days, like, they in many ways provided the soundtrack for my theological development. And I'm really grateful to the Lord for that. What are you remembering from East Asia?
Well, like how when you first, I think when you went on summer mission to East Asia, of like how many East Asian students are drawn to basketball in general. Because they'll talk to you, they want to play basketball with an American. And so you were able to try to leverage that, but failed miserably.
So I wanted to learn how to say, in the local language, I love basketball. Okay. This is like day two. I know how to say hello and where's the bathroom, right? Third sentence I want to learn. I love basketball, you know? So I looked it up in the dictionary, like any normal person would. And I may mean a real dictionary, Shelby. This was a little
like a paper dictionary.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'm cool.
I'm flipping pages. Okay, let's find the L's. Okay, so I love basketball. I got the sentence down cold. I was saying it to students on this college campus, left and right. And this was meant to be a on road to sharing Christ with him.
Making connections. Yeah,
exactly. And what I realized, unfortunately, not soon enough, is that what I was actually telling them was, I am desperately in love with this basketball.
which you were holding. You are romantically in love with this basketball.
Yeah. So I was like walking up to 18-year-old, you know, sweet East Asian students and maybe their first interaction with an American. And I'm just with so much confidence. I am desperately in love with this particular basketball.
Good for you, American. Want to play the sport, or are you afraid to bounce your love onto the floor?
Would you like to know what I believe? Yeah.
Let me segue now into a soul-changing presentation that will undoubtedly rock you forever. Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I really wanted to eke it out of you, so thanks. What would you say, speaking a little bit about your time in missions work and sharing the gospel, what would you say most Christians miss or get wrong when it comes to our approach concerning sharing the gospel with others? Like, what are the flaws in our thoughts and hearts when we hear that big word, evangelism?
I think we can define evangelism as the results of evangelism. So, in other words, we can assume that success is seeing results. Success is seeing conversions. Rather than, to quote Bill Bright, you know, walking in the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving the results to God. I think to the degree that I am leaving the results to God, I am freed to share Christ with people and be willing to be rejected, because I understand that at the end of the day, they're not rejecting me, they're rejecting him.
Right.
But when I forget that and it becomes about me, I'm actually getting in the way of the very gospel I'm trying to share. So I think that's one. I think and another thing I learned in, you know, my 20s was, I think I always assumed that the main thing that held me back from sharing Christ with people was fear. And it's true that fear is a massive and sometimes insurmountable barrier for us. And it still sneaks up on me today, and I'll miss gospel opportunities because I'm afraid of being embarrassed or rejected or not having a ready answer to a skeptic's objection. But I was really convicted several years ago when I realized, well, actually, it's not so much the presence of fear that keeps me from opening my mouth and speaking about Christ. It's the absence of love. Because if I really loved someone enough, I would overcome my fear in order to share with them the greatest news they would ever hear. And I would encourage listeners to look up on YouTube a clip by atheist magician and author named Penn Jillette. I have the transcript here. I'll just briefly read part of his comments. Again, this is an atheist speaking. He says, "I don't respect people who don't proselytize. I don't respect that at all. If you believe that there's a heaven and hell and people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life or whatever, and you think that it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward, how much do you have to hate somebody to not proselytize? How much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? I mean, if I believed beyond a shadow of a doubt that a truck was coming at you and you didn't believe it, but that truck was bearing down on you, there's a certain point where I tackle you. And this is more important than that." I might phrase some things a little differently than he did, but the point stands. I mean, this is coming from a guy who's not well-versed in Christian lingo, and yet he's observing something that I think we as Christians can so often forget.
Yeah, that's so good, bro. So good. you had said success early on, a quote from Elizabeth Elliot, who said basically that success is obedience. That's what success is. And so as she was asked about whether or not her husband, Jim Elliot, was successful since he was killed early on in his missionary attempts with the Aka Indians. And she was like, successful? Of course he was successful. He was obedient. And I love that just implied definition that as we are obedient to Jesus, we are successful regardless of the numbers. And we do get obsessed with growth or obsessed with followers or obsessed with like approval. And I think that's one thing that can speak to young people today to help them to understand that success in the eyes of the Lord is obedience to him. And yet, when we fail, not if we fail, but when we fail, there is grace for that, which should drive us deeper into our relationship with God as opposed to running away from him in shame.
And, you know, the Elizabeth Elliot quote makes me think, because you said, I totally agree with her, that obedience is success. But then you said, when we fail, which is also true. So I think you could also say repentance is success.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm going to end with this final question. Depending on the person, you could think about a person who would spark some kind of anticipation or anxiety or feeling in you when they're texting you. Pick that person in your mind. When you see those three dots in motion and they're texting you back, what do you wish would pop up on your screen?
Well, if it's Shelby Abbott, I'm going to hope that it is some reference to the greatest comedy of all time, What About Bob? Some obscure, exquisite quote from that blessed movie.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good.
We have a mutual friend, Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes he'll send the same memes to both of us.
Yeah.
He is a curator of amazing GIFs and memes. And so, yeah, if I see that he's texting me, I can pretty much guess that I'll be smiling in about 9 seconds.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. So you're a GIF guy, not a GIF guy?
I'm a GIF. Very much GIF.
Yeah, I heard the inventor of them, he calls them GIF. I can't do it. I've always called them GIFs. I can't do the GIF thing. Well, that's it. That's all we have for our time. So,
well, it's an honor, man. Love you. Thanks for, I mean, let's see. We have been in each other's lives for 2 decades now. And it's fun to be able to connect in ways like this. Really excited about this new show of yours. And may the Lord bless you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Matt Rules, if you want to read a few very short books that he's written to come alongside you in what I call kind of the normal Christian life, I'd recommend you pick up Before You Open Your Bible and Before You Share Your Faith. I even endorse that second one. It's fantastic. And if this conversation with Matt has been helpful for you, I'd love for you to share today's podcast with a friend. And wherever you get your podcasts, it can really advance what we're doing with Real Life Loading if you'd rate and review us. It's also ridiculously easy to find us on our social channels. Just search Real Life Loading or look for our links in the show notes. I want to thank my producers, Josh Batson and Bruce Goff. I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time on Real Life Loading. Real Life Loading is a production of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.